know, I did start to feel like, oh, I need to like get out of my kitchen. I need to like,
yeah.
I don't want to cook today. Mm-hmm. Like my barriers feel so small and so trite, but I think that they're also valid. I think any barrier is valid. Like sometimes I just do not want to cook.
You just heard David Tamarkin, editor at epicurious.com. He's talking about his Cook 90 challenge, in which he vowed to the internet to cook every single meal he ate in January. He gave himself a few free passes, as anyone who's writing the rules of their own challenge would, but he aims to end this month having cooked 90 meals, and he also aims to end it happier than he was when he started it. This struck a chord. Why does it have to be all or nothing? Could you learn to love cooking again simply by asking yourself to cook 4 or 5 meals a week instead of 15? And what is cooking, really? What defines it? Does assembling a salad count or toasting bread? And are we not home cooks if we eat eggs for dinner most nights of the week? By this definition, by the way, I would hardly qualify. I'm Kenzie Wilbur, this is Burnt Toast, and straight ahead, David explains his challenge and talks about the things he didn't expect to learn. You decided to cook every single meal in January. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You're on day 25, is that right?
Yeah, day 25.
So I want to talk about how it's been and what you've learned, but first, why?
There are a few reasons. The first reason was not even something to be written about. I just thought, well, I know that cooking makes me happy. It like has that sort of magical and sort of like cheesy effect, you know, that people talk about, oh, you know, get into the kitchen, it's like gonna make you feel so much better, just like go ahead and like chop up some tomatoes and like make a soup or something, or make a cassoulet. Like, I don't know, it just I just like makes me squirm when I hear like people say that. Like, I'm not, you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly,
you know
what
exactly what
about.
I'm talking about,
but yet you were trying to find a little piece of,
well, that. No, I find that it's true. I find that it really does make me feel mm-hmm. better. It kind of makes me feel calmer mm-hmm. and less anxious, and so I thought, well, in this year, for some reason, I was really kind of into like New Year's resolution thing, which I've never done before. But I thought that'd be a great one. I have no interest in like dieting or cleansing or anything like that. But I thought, well, if I could cook more, that'd be great. The second thing is that, you know, I felt like if I cooked every day, I might get to know my readers a little bit better. Because there are a lot of them that do cook every day, all 3 meals a day. And I just read something about the barriers to cooking that people face, which includes stuff like, well, money, mm-hmm. access to grocery stores, job schedules that are not predictable, mm-hmm. having, you know, children or partners that have different tastes, and so it's hard to cook something to please everybody. A lot of things, a lot of really valid things, and none of them apply to me. So I really felt like it's hard for me to understand those things. But if I could cook every day and see what my barriers were, then I felt like I would be able to better understand the barriers that my readers have.
So what are some of the barriers about your own cooking life that you've learned so far?
Organization is like number one. Like if I'm not doing all the things that I tell people to do on the website, like meal plan and do a big weekly shop, and you know, if I don't do those things, I'm not gonna be a good cook that week, because I'm just having like a panic attack at 3 o'clock, like what am I gonna make, and then I'm gonna go shopping after work, and then I'm not gonna get back to home until like what, 8 o'clock or something, and then am I gonna feel like cooking? It's just not a good idea. I understand that in Europe, I guess people do this every day, but is this I mean, I think they also like get out of work at 4 o'clock there. It's like not, so it's a different thing. So that's been the main thing. At this point, I have started to get a little, not bored, but restless.
Mm-hmm. In what way?
Well, I used to be a restaurant critic. I used to go out for 10 years. I was a restaurant critic in Chicago, and I was going out all the time. And I definitely like do not want to do that anymore, but I'm realizing about myself that I need to get out of the house more. I have not used, well, I did actually, last night was the first night I used one of my, I gave myself 3 passes.
Mm-hmm.
It's Cook 90 for 31 days, so I get 3 passes. And I used my first pass last night and ate dinner out.
Where did you go?
I went to the Red Cat.
Okay. And what did you have?
I had these really delicious clams in like a spicy sauce, and they had like sliced jalapenos and white beans.
Could you have made it yourself?
Yeah, I could have made it myself. Have I done clams? I just think clams are really tough because they're so easy to overcook. So I get a little nervous about making clams.
But also it's not really about that, right? You wanted to be out and in a different place and...
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. It was about I feel like I've been like stuck inside all month and either been at my house or at my boyfriend's house. A couple of times I cooked with friends, which was allowed according to my rules. Yeah, it is a shift. It's not how I normally define. So it's like taking some getting used to. And I'm pleased that it took me 24 days to get restless enough that I had to like use one of my passes. Mm-hmm. Up to then, it was totally fine.
So take us through some of these rules for people who aren't familiar with exactly what Cook 90 entails.
I can't use leftovers more than twice. So if I make a soup tonight, I can eat it for lunch tomorrow. And then I can eat it for lunch the next day, but I can't do anything more than that. I have to cook something new, something that I've never cooked before, 3 times a week. And that gets me to the third reason why I'm doing this, which I forgot before, which is basically I just want to be a better cook and wanted to expand my horizons. There are some things that I'd never done. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never made sushi at home. I'm still not going to do that. but you know, there are things like that I wanted to try.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to make three throughout the month. I had to cook 3 cuisines that I'd never cooked before. So I knocked those out, I think, in the first week.
Yeah. I like those 2 last rules. That seems like something that we could all sort of take a page out of that book and be better cooks that way. But I'm wondering why it was an all or nothing approach for you. I'm wondering why you couldn't get back to the joy of cooking or learn to be better organized or become a better cook if you were just to promise yourself to make dinner every night for 30 days.
The impetus for this came from the fact that when I looked at my bank account, I would see mainly 2 things. It would be like Condé Nast Cafeteria, Condé Nast Cafeteria, Condé Nast Cafeteria, MTA, Condé Nast Cafeteria, Condé Nast Cafeteria, and then like maybe a dinner out. Like I was going to the Condé Nast Cafeteria 2 or 3 times a day. I was getting breakfast there. I was getting lunch there. I was getting coffee there. I just recognize that that's really ridiculous because the things, especially when you consider what I was getting, I was getting 2 hard-boiled eggs and some toast every morning and spending $4 for it. It's just, and they weren't hard-boiled very well. I mean, they were really pretty, they were kind of much, you know, I didn't even think they were hard-boiled there. I think they're like bought in like big bags and kept in like water for like weeks.
Do you know? No, Condé Nast.
You know what I mean?
Step it up.
So that's why I think I did 90 because it was important for me to have breakfast and lunch in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know why all or nothing approach. I guess I didn't believe that if I just said, well, I'm just going to cook more this year, I didn't believe that I would do it.
You needed to set a limit.
Yeah. And it's something about doing it publicly. Like I said, it wasn't something I was going to write about. So here's the thing. I really believe like very strongly that this is a good thing. And I don't want to be prescriptive. I have no interest in judging anybody's cooking or how they eat. And I've gotten some judgment like about how I'm cooking like from commenters, yeah, which is interesting. So I believe 2 things and they're sort of contradicting. So one is that nobody should be judged on the way that they cook and with the way they feed themselves. And I mean, you know, especially, you know, from the barriers I talked about before, barriers that I can't understand. At the same time, I do also believe that cooking is good for us as humans. I think it does have mental health benefits. I think it has physical health benefits. I think it's economical, and I think it's just a skill that we should all have. Because I believe in this, it's not hard for me to. I don't have any qualms about making it public or trying to get a hashtag going. And in fact, you know, next year I'll try to get more. And I'm going to reach out to you next year. I'm going to say, hey, will you do this with me? Because I've had some like food writers say, oh, if I'd known, I've done it with you. And I think that could be really fun just to see. Mm-hmm. And I've had some people jump on. You know, people hear about it 5 days, and they can't. There's a significant barrier to entry unless you like got in January 1st,
right,
at 9 a.m. or sure, 7 a.m., you know?
Sure, and Cook 25 doesn't have the same ring, right? Or
right.
Cook 85 or Cook 66.
Right. Although I did 2 days ago or yesterday, I saw someone on Instagram say, oh, I'm inspired by Cook 90, so this week I'm going to do Cook 21, which I love that. I mean, I just love it. I think so I think that anybody who tries to jump in a little bit will get benefits from it. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the ways that you've been judged by your cooking.
Yeah, let's just
let's talk. Let's get it out
me.
There.
Yeah. Well, the first kind of comments I got, and I thought they were fascinating, they were, is that cooking, or you call that cooking? And it was when I was like posting pictures of soft boiled eggs, because that's my main thing. I was like, okay, I'm going to soft boil a dozen eggs on Sunday, and I'll bring them into work, and I won't have to rely on the cafeteria eggs anymore. And that's what I did every day for that first week. Well, I got sick of those eggs pretty quickly. I don't know why I got sick of those eggs and not, I mean, they were much better than the Crown Nasty eggs, but also I couldn't report on those very much. And you'll see, I don't really report on my breakfast very much because it's really repetitive. It's like a smoothie or it's eggs. Mm-hmm. So the question was, is that cooking? I thought that was a great question. I had never considered that. And it led to a good discussion like with people in my life and on Twitter. And people said, well, if there's heat involved, it's cooking. And some people said, well, no, think about sushi. If there's thought involved, it's cooking, which I sort of liked. And I settled on, well, if you've transformed something through heat, or let's say ice cream, like through freezing or something, mm-hmm. which also involves heat, that's cooking. And also, if you've taken some things and put them together.
Assembly cooking?
Yeah. I mean, well, that was the question. Is it assembly or is it cooking? But mm-hmm. I think if you've created something that's greater than the sum of its parts, then you've cooked something.
Mm-hmm. You said something in a blog post that was really smart. It was, if I've used my skills in the kitchen to feed myself, mm-hmm. that's cooking. Mm-hmm. So yeah, assembly is cooking, and mm-hmm. cooking an egg is cooking, and mm-hmm. spreading something on pieces of bread and putting them together, that's cooking. I don't think that there is any definition too simple of cooking, and it doesn't surprise me that people sort of went that direction, but it's kind of a bummer.
It is kind of a bummer. I also think it speaks to the way the cooking conversation has gone the past couple of years, mm-hmm. maybe a couple of decades. But I think that there are websites like yours and mine that celebrate kind of any cooking. I think there are lots of places that do that. This is not meant to be like rah-rah us. But I think you can't, you know, cookbooks and cooking television shows, of course they can't focus on very, very simple cooking because
it
would be
watch?
Boring. Yeah, what is there to watch? It'd be too fat. You're right. But I think, I don't know if that's having, I think that might be having a detrimental effect on home cooks who are getting intimidated rather than feeling inspired or empowered. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel that pressure too. I mean, I can't fill Epicurious every day with how to make a tuna sandwich, you know? I mean, I want to talk, you know, I want to appeal to all home cooks. So I want to give like big projects and I want to give small things. And so I understand why that happens, but I worry about how we got to that place where we're like judging people for their food and more importantly, feeling inadequate. Mm-hmm. I just always think about my sister who lives in Cincinnati and has three very young kids. I just think back to times when I've cooked around her and she's looked on and said, how did you do that? I could never do that. That was just so sad to me, you know, just so that she thinks she can't do it when I know that she can.
That there seems like a much larger barrier to entry than there really is. And if really we talked about cooking as the ability to boil an egg every single morning, then it would be a little bit of a different tenor. Mm-hmm. Do you think that your definition of what cooking is has changed in the past month, or did you sort of go into this month feeling that way?
Yeah, I don't think I had a definition before this month. I think that conversation forced me to mm-hmm. really think about what I considered cooking and what I didn't.
How do you feel about the pre-prep meal? Does that count? Is that cooking to you?
I've never done one, so I don't know. It does make me think of Sandra Lee.
Mm-hmm.
That's her name,
it's
right?
A little semi-homemade?
Yes, the First Lady of New York. I remember when she came out, people were very dismissive, but then some people said, well, wait, is she 90%, is she encouraging people to buy more pre-prepped ingredients, or is she getting people who buy 100% like, you know, box things, is she getting them to cook more?
Which direction is it going?
Yeah. And I thought that was a really interesting point. And you know, everybody starts somewhere, right? And so I bet that there were people who were cooking more, incorporating more fresh ingredients into their cooking because of her. So I sort of took a, you know, I fell back on criticizing her. I also thought that she was, I don't know if this is really relevant, but I also thought that she was one of the first people to talk about cooking cheaply. I remember she had a show come out like a few years after her Semi-Homemade that was all about like finding deals at the supermarket and stuff like that. And this was when the economy was really bad. And I thought that was really smart and really responsible.
And real.
Yeah, and very real. Yes. Yeah. So I'm sort of like a...
Funny to talk about her in that light, huh? Sandra Lee as being real.
Yeah, right.
But it is.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, the elements of her... But, and then there's... Nothing's black and white, right? There are problems with her as well. Like, she did some weird stuff too. But like, so anyway, so these boxes... For me, it's a similar question. Like, okay, well, I've talked to people who are real cooks, and when I say that, I mean like people who like cook a lot and are like have a lot of skills in the kitchen and aren't intimidated by anything mm-hmm. and are used to prepping everything. I've talked to those people who have tried a box and said that it really felt like cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing that kind of concerns me about it is like, would it feel like cooking to me? I want to feel like I'm cooking.
It does. I've done one and it does. I think, you know, I think it depends on the service.
Was the one that you did it, would it come pre-prepped or was it?
No.
Okay.
You have to like chop up your stuff uh-huh. yourself. The spices come pre-measured and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it goes back to barriers, right? If your barriers to getting in the kitchen are that you don't have the time to scour new recipes, or you don't know where to look to mm-hmm. start doing that,
right.
or you find yourself cooking the same thing every single
right.
day.
Which I do, too.
Which we all do.
Yeah.
I think it's a good thing. I mean, mm-hmm. it solves a very set number of problems for people. And I think if the end result is getting more people in the kitchen, then it's a success.
Yeah.
I think they're extraordinarily wasteful.
Yeah, so wasteful.
But that's a whole separate topic.
And also the thing about that, the thing that I think is lost there is if you only have a pre-measured amount of, like, let's say it's turmeric, you like it,
mm-hmm.
you don't get the sort of joy of having that turmeric in your spice cabinet and getting to kind of try it again in something else, like, oh, maybe I'll put it here,
mm-hmm.
and that, yes, you could go out and you could remember that you liked it and put it on your grocery list and buy it,
right.
and I'm sure that's happening. But
right.
there is something really great about having all these little bits and pieces left mm-hmm. over from cooking
right.
that you can incorporate into new things.
So, did you intend to raise all of these questions when you first started about what is cooking and how are we supposed to do it and what is our end goal as food editors?
No, I didn't. I did it on the, it was very impulsive, you know, I just thought I was going to do it.
Let's talk about the highlights. Have there been any especially bright moments, things you've cooked that have turned out really well, days where you're just like, wow, I am being exceptionally resourceful right now?
mm-hmm. Yeah, so one highlight was I cooked this meal that one of my coworkers, a recipe that one of my coworkers developed. It's a sheet pan dinner, it's chicken thighs that you roast over delicata squash. I wish it were called delicata. That'd be so fun to say. Delicata squash.
Little flair.
Right. Delicata squash, fennel, and grapes. And that was really a delicious meal. And I had the vegetables left over and some grapes and everything. And it was in the chicken fat. It was like very schmaltzy. And I blended that into a soup. And I think that was a turning point for me because, you know, of course, I've blended vegetables into a soup before, but I've never put grapes into a soup, and I didn't know. I don't know. I mean, there was just something about turning that into something really, it was really good. It was really delicious. It was so schmaltzy, and the grapes really worked. And just not questioning myself on that and just saying, okay, I'm just going to go for this. And knowing that I knew how to fix it, and I knew that water was going to be fine. I didn't have to use broth. I have a whole thing about water. Like, I just really like, I really like just water.
Underrated ingredient.
Yeah, I think it's the most underrated ingredient. So that was just a very small moment that I liked.
But when you think about it, like, how different is using grapes in a soup than using apples in a squash soup, which is something we see all the time?
Yeah,
it's
right.
like these little moments, I think, that happen if you're forced to do something
mm-hmm.
And you feel you have no other options
yeah.
than to keep using up your
right.
food. You start
right.
to learn, like, well, it's fruit. Like,
mm-hmm.
it'll be a little acidic and a mm-hmm. little bright, and it'll be exactly like every other, mm-hmm. you know, fruit I've ever put in a soup.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you're totally right. And that was, and now I'll do that again. That's sort of what we were talking about with like the turmeric example before. But it was really wonderful to be the student taking a, learning a new skill and playing with ingredients that I hadn't played with before, and knowing that I really liked it and that I want to do it again. I don't know. There was just something. It's nice to be mm-hmm. learning stuff actively and realize that you're learning and be seeking out learning and doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't really think we ever stop being students in the kitchen, even if we're food editors and we've been in the business for a long time. Or I think a lot of people assume that we just go home and whip stuff up. But in fact, you had to be sort of forced mm-hmm. in order to like have those tables turn and ask to be taught something new or try a new cuisine. And I think that's important to remember. Has anybody reached out other than naysayers critiquing whether or not what you're doing is cooking? Has anybody reached out in any other way? Have you had any other feedback?
Yeah. I mean, I've had people on Instagram and Twitter play along. And they're sending me their photos and they're putting them up. And I've had lots of people say that they're inspired by it, which is really nice. I've had people say, not in a shady way or anything, but say, you've got to be kidding me. I could never do that. I have, and mainly it's in the context of, I have a big family to feed, or I have two kids to feed. I can't, I mean, with two babies, I'm like, no way. I mean, and again, I have no idea what that's like, so I believe that, you know. But yeah, I've gotten lots of good response. I think it's refreshing for some people to see this as a New Year's thing, because a lot of New Year's resolutions are, especially when it comes to food, are all about cleansing and health and cutting things out. And I really didn't want to do that. I wanted to design something that didn't feel like a punishment, and maybe those cleanses don't feel like punishments to some people, but I don't know
those people.
Yeah. I'm trying to be like, just like, oh, whatever, everything's for everybody, whatever.
You can say cleanses are bad.
So I think it's refreshing for people to see something that's like not about like losing weight or about judging what we're putting into our bodies. I also had some people kind of question the nutrition of what I'm eating. But I'm not putting up everything I eat. Like when I make a salad, like I feel like I can only broadcast so many salads to the world.
Like you're not eating healthy enough?
Yes, like I'm not. Because one morning I made like a grilled cheese sandwich for breakfast.
I feel like that's empowering.
It was really good. But the one of the comments was, have you gained weight on this?
Mm-hmm. So for being such an internal project, you know, the way that this started, it was just something that you wanted to do to find happiness in the kitchen again. It obviously grew from there and people have caught on and whatnot. But is there anything that you hope to teach? Like your editorial around this doesn't seem particularly servicey. It doesn't. Are there things that you have come away with wanting to tell people or help people through? Or
one thing that I was working on today that's not up yet, I'll give you a huge, huge scoop.
Scoop.
You know? Yeah. It's this thing about the big shop at the beginning of the week. I am going to write that. I don't think it's, I know it's wildly unoriginal advice, but I've had to take it, like I've heard this advice a million times and I still have not done my big shop for this week, and I did it last week and I felt so much calmer, and now
you feel lost and
anxious. I feel I'm not, like, I know I'm not doing it right now.
Is it one of those stories that you have probably said no to before? Like, I wouldn't run on that. That's too boring.
I probably would. I don't know if I have actively said no to it, but I probably would. I probably would say, no, I'm not going to do that. And of course, so the way I'm writing is, I know you've heard this before, but
anyway,
I did put up something about like five things that were helping me cook. Like I've really been into some frozen fish. Mm-hmm. Frozen fish is a new thing for me. I haven't ever cooked with that before, but now I just see so much value in it, both actual like money value and also just mm-hmm. value from a time standpoint and mm-hmm. a cooking standpoint. So there are a few servicey things here and there. I'm careful not to be like, here's all this you know, amazing wisdom that I'm going to impart on you now, because I did this for 30 days. I mean, I can't get the voices out of my head that are saying to me, I'm sorry, they're not voices in my head, they're actual people who have said to me, I do this every day, what's so special about you doing that? Which is a great point, and And I really feel like this is a learning project and not so much a teaching project.
Mm-hmm. Is it sort of like the biggest lessons I learned are the lessons that we've known all along?
Well, I mean, that's beautiful. Maybe I'll use that. I don't know.
Did you read your headline?
Yeah, I think so. And also, I mean, I also think, real talk about this is about 3 days ago, it did start to get a little irritating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did start to feel like, oh, I need to, like, get out of my kitchen. I need to, like,
yeah.
I don't want to cook today. Mm-hmm. Like, my barriers feel so small and so trite, but I think that they're also valid. I think any barrier is valid. Like, sometimes I just do not want to cook.
But I think the thing about this is that you should be able to take bits and pieces from what you've done, and it's not, you know, you don't have to take the whole thing and adapt it to your life in order to make it work for you. I think just getting into the kitchen is the point. Any other magical benefits? Is your skin clearer? Are you funnier? Just more spring in your step?
It's hard for me to get funnier. Like, I'm just already so funny. No. I don't think I'm seeing any health benefits. I think I'm drinking more wine.
Do you think that you would have done this if you weren't a food editor?
I don't know. I don't know if I would have stuck with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have stuck with it if it wasn't public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's accountability there for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I think no. I think I wouldn't if I was not a food editor. No, I mean, a lot of the things that sparked the project are kind of a direct result of me talking to people every day about food. If not face-to-face, you know, just through
every other way.
Through the Facebook.
Yes.
Through the Twitter.
Yes, exactly. So what are you cooking for dinner tonight?
Yesterday, I was reading through my fridge and seeing, like, all these bits and pieces. I had a lot of celery that I didn't know what I was going to do with.
Nobody knows.
No, I know.
Nobody knows.
And I had, like, 3 carrots. I had 1 onion. I had, like, 2 little pieces of pancetta. So I just made, you know, mirepoix. Well, I did the pancetta first, and then I scooped that out, and then I just... So I have this pot of mirepoix in my fridge.
Oh, you already cooked it?
Yeah, I already cooked it, which I've never done before. I don't know how this is going to work, but I think it's going to be good.
It's going to
be fine.
Totally fine.
I'm going to just throw some lentils in there and some water and just make another soup. But
yum.
But this
no,
is something...
that'll be good.
This is based on a recipe I followed for French... on the recipe, it's an Epicurious recipe. It's a French lentil soup. I think it's from, like, Gourmet 1966 or something, you know?
Sounds very classic.
Yeah, very classic. And they have you put the celery leaves on top as a garnish.
Oh, nice.
So I cooked it, you know, already. Like, I was never a big, like, mirepoix person with my soup. I would always do, like, onion and garlic, but never the celery and carrot and, you know, just the classic. And so already I'm kind of seeing, like, oh, well, I made this very classic French soup earlier in the month. So I know that that works. I know that that's good. And I don't think that would have been in my mind had I not done it earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm seeing these things kind of come back already, which is fun. So that's what I have for dinner. That's what I have for lunch.
But no more than one time after that.
I can do it 2 times. Yeah, no more than one time after that.
Otherwise, you'll be breaking your own rules.
I'm breaking my own rules.
David, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us. And good luck with finishing out the rest of the meals.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of Burnt Toast. Our producer is Tim Einenkel, and thanks also to Laura Mayer, Henry Malofsky, and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Please let us know what you think of the show. Our Twitter address is @food52, or leave us a review on iTunes. We're also looking for your thoughts on cooking. What do you think it means to be a home cook? What counts as cooking and what doesn't? Record your answers in a short voice memo and email it to us at editors@food52.com for a chance to be featured on our next episode. For David Tamarkin and home cooks everywhere, I'm Kenzie Wilbur. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.